Hi, I'm back here, continuing the continued of the continued. I left off with speaking about realizing of the effects of the pain and the residual effects that my daughter is experiencing from the trauma in the group homes. I ended with giving up my properties, and I just want to in my brain, thinking about how I don't want to go back, that it's all about me. And though my podcast is not about me, nor is it about my daughter, not directly, and I have many recordings, and not the recordings that I have recorded individually, the recordings that I have recorded when I'm speaking to other people through the years, and especially the ones of the group home, actually, when I'm trying to fight for my daughter, when I am asking for help, and within that, I'm asking to help them, because I see so much that had been going on that was so wrong. And I would say my experiences as a child, my experiences as an educator within the field, and later on being diagnosed and openly sharing that, then being an outcast due to that, divulging that information, and feeling the night and day contrast of how I was respected. And I don't want to hold it on, well, I want respect, or I'm demanding respect because I deserve respect. Not like that. I know in the other podcast I was talking about pride and ego, and we got off of that conversation. I want to come back to that, because there is a difference between having pride and having an ego. I'm the first one to, and I don't want to again say I'm the first one. Okay, it is a fine balance of, you know, coming off cocky, and I never want to come off that way. And sometimes it could sound that. So I want to always pull back and make sure people understand and feel that is definitely not how I want to be perceived. And if it is how I'm being perceived or coming off that, with that perception, I definitely want to bow my head and definitely reassure and step back and say, no, no, no. I am coming with my cup half empty, and let me actually take that back. I'm coming with my cup empty, and I want to take from other people, you know, or and I want to learn from other people, and I am open-minded, you know. But, or I could look at it another way. I'm coming half empty because I want to come with half of my knowledge, and or with some of my knowledge, and help and share what I know. And I'm very mindful and try to be mindful. And what I quote is, mindfulness is a practice, not a perfection. We can only practice mindfulness, okay? And it's not perfect. So my mindfulness is to be kind to others. My mindfulness is to try to choose the appropriate words, okay? And so I don't want to teach, I want to share. I don't want to, I'm not teaching, I'm not going to preach, because nobody wants to hear and be preached to, and I don't want to teach because I'm not no better than anyone. But I would like to share my experiences, because it's my experiences of what helps me, though they might not help everyone, but some of them might help some people. Just like learning, some people learn, well, all people learn differently. And so some people might learn better the way my experiences helped me, while other people might take that and it might not be helpful for them. So everyone can share. I can share this, that, well, someone taught me, actually, it was Allison, and she actually gave me this plaque. A thought is just a thought, and it's part of therapy, but I could think that because it's, you know, and we all could think this, that, well, no one's, you know, what I have to give is not useful. Or I learned in, with Elephant Journal, that, you know, what value are my writings? You know, I read that somewhere else, or someone's written that, or, you know, everyone has experienced that. But your writing, even if your story is a story that everyone's, it's a book that's been written before, but it's how your perspective from your life. I know I could go on a tangent in so many different directions, but so mindfulness is not just, you know, be in that particular moment and how many, I'm not knocking therapists, but in a therapeutic, and I don't know all therapeutic modalities of each therapist, but speaking to a good significant amount, you know, in chats and things like that, and in seminars and in conferences, it's being in the moment, for stressful times, that you, for meditation purposes, and that's where people have taken mindfulness. For me, I have known mindfulness most of my life. And mindfulness has been being mindful of others and being mindful as in kindness. And mindfulness, I'm not going to get really so much in depth of mindfulness. Mindfulness is a broad aspect of less of everything. It's across the spectrum of having nothing. There's no time, there's no space. There's the existence of just like of just you and peace. And being within yourself and the humanity of others. It's not about what is what's humanly made. It's not about the borders that man made, or clocks that man made, or calendars that man made, or materialistic things that man made. I know I've gotten totally onto left field, which I said I wouldn't, but I think many recordings are going to be like this. I guess that's why I've never, and that's what this beginning of this recording was going to be. How do I piece everything together? Well, I once went to a, years ago, about, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, I went to a Reiki, wasn't a seminar, it was this woman, she was hosting a mindful, it was just for a comforting kind of thing. And I needed, my daughter was still in the group home. I didn't know where things were at the time. Here I go, jumping again. And I went to this, it wasn't officially a meetup. I'm not sure what it was. I saw it posted on Facebook, maybe, in a Facebook group thing. And I went. Something I really would never normally do. But I needed to get out. And I went, and I actually really liked it. The people were really nice. It was small. And the woman hosting, I think her name was Connie, actually. And she was really sweet. And my problem is I've been around. I'm not that old. I'm 52. But I've had a colorful life, I guess. And The reason why this came up is because I was going to say that I'm a Reiki master. Right now, I was going to say on the tape. And I am an ordained minister. I was going to say that too. And I always feel almost threatened. I don't know if it's the right word. It's a strong word. You know, and like I said, I try to be mindful of my words. And I don't ever like talking about my... And the recording the recording that I was referencing before, like I said, it went to many different phases. I actually broke down and cried, saying that I don't know how to talk for myself or ask to talk for myself, like, stuff. I mean, I guess you'd have to listen to the recording. And I don't feel comfortable talking about my successes, nor do I feel comfortable talking about, like, the terrible things that happened to me as well. I like to just advocate and help and talk and let people talk to me. And I just like helping other people. You know, I say it a million times, and it kind of seems like, well, maybe it's counter-reversed, because here I am talking and saying everything opposite that what I'm saying. But if you only knew that if I ever post these, they're all would probably be posted one after another. That these are not being done like... This is me talking to myself to my recording on my phone. This is me talking to myself. It's not me going live. It's not me recording and then putting it out there, trying to engage with society. It's me, myself, and I. And it's always how has it been. And it's not that I want sympathy. It's quite opposite. I don't like attention. I don't like sympathy. It's kind of like the Rod Stewart song, Never Give Up on the Dream. At one point at the end, it says something about never taking sympathy. And it's again something in the recording before this on the same day, April 28th, 2002. That, what did I say? How was I thinking? I don't know. No, that, I don't want sympathy. I don't know. I even wrote something yesterday to OPWDD. I didn't send it, but I wrote it and then screenshotted it and deleted it, which I said in the last thing, recording from today, that, I record everything and I screen shoot everything and everything is pretty much documented. Why? I have no idea. It's just, it's part of my autism. And that I have always said in many recordings, and I give a shout out to Stephen Shore when he says, you've met one person with autism. You've only met one person with autism. And I piggyback on that and I say that, we all have our own autism, and that is my autism. My autism is I document everything. I screenshot everything. I'm very, very, and someone might have that same kind of thing and might have a little differentiation of how they do it, but I keep track of everything that way. One, it's because I have a really bad memory, and not due to my autism, but to my neurological issues due to medical issues. So And it also goes briefly to how I describe the tree on autism, that we all have the same, possibly when it comes to the categories, getting a diagnosis, which is, the foundation of the soil and, the seeds and, the roots. And then we have, we have the trunk, but then we, which makes it pretty sturdy diagnosis that makes the spectrum. And then we have our branches, which totally make us all branch out to different individuals. And then we have our leaves, which make us our own person. So, what brought me to that person, who I think her name was Connie, when I went to this place, her home, and I enjoyed, I didn't go back. What made me uncomfortable was, I feel like, and this is probably to my childhood, I feel like that when I'm tooting my own horn, and how could people believe me? Because I have, forget about just being in the spectrum. That had nothing to do with being in the spectrum. But then if you find out I am in the spectrum, people have this this condescending outlook on autism, and not all people, but in a broad brush. But even without having autism, they look at you and, how are you really all this? You succeeded so much, and I don't even say like most of it, because when you talk, it's hard not to. You're not bragging, but it's hard not to get into a conversation and engage in that conversation and speak about who you are. And you're not necessarily saying what you do, but you're engaging in a conversation and you're relating to scenarios. And it's hard not to expose indirectly what you do, So if you do many things, it's hard not to. So having a martial arts school, and having a daycare center, an after school program, it's and a preschool, it's hard not to. And then obviously, because you're talking about people, you're talking about children, you're talking about, different things, and you're talking maybe about a technique. And, my martial arts school was unique because I dealt with pressure points, and I dealt with healing, because in my school we happened to, again, I'm stuck in the same scenario. Explaining this here in a recording, and then I will have to say, it's a controversial system, yes. Whether you believe in it or not, it's irrelevant, though. My system, though it's not my system, it's the system that I train under. And I teach, and though it was on TV with Discovery Channel, and my son was in the documentary. So you get into this conversation, the fact that I did Reiki And it's a spiritual feeling. I am an ordained minister. And you explain all this and people look at you that, you know, that when you're outside of your comfort zone, your, and I wouldn't even say comfort zone because I don't have, it's not my comfort zone, but when you're outside of your element, okay, you are, I wouldn't even say that you're a nobody, but people don't know if whether you're telling the truth or not, you know, and then they find out that you're autistic, all of a sudden they think you're Pinocchio, you know? So, and then when you are trying to do something within the system, you're not Pinocchio, you're a piece of poo-poo. And you don't get the time of day. So when you are a person of that caliber, and I'm no one special, so I have two thoughts in my head. I am woman, hear me roar, because I have been a woman, hear me roar, since I was a child being abused. I didn't take poo-poo. I fought tooth and nails. Even when I was curled up in a corner, I fought back. Whether it was overdosing on the damn medication that they gave me to make me submissive. I know it was a terrible way to it's not the best way to, I am woman, hear me roar, to give up, but I was 15 years old. It felt like my only alternative back then. But that was the last and only time. Though, like in the other recording, when I was with my doctor, I kept reversing every day in her office to those thoughts. Because it was, I don't know, maybe it was the only control I had to try to just, I don't know, just, I was fighting so much those days. I was fighting the system for my daughter to get out of the group home and get her apartment. I was fighting the state to keep my license. For whatever reason, they were taking it away, which were no reasons, except that I, so say, came out of the closet and said I had autism. And one day, these recordings will come out, and I will put the recordings of the state with the letter that they wrote that had no comparison to what happened that actual day, to the recordings on the phones, to how they spoke to me, to the things in the courtroom, to the lady never showed up to court, to everything that went wrong. That's what I want. I want vindication. I want vindication. I want vindication for when the police officer threw me down on the ground for the $8.10, and the women laughed while I was on the ground pleading. The embarrassment, the humiliation. And each time after, when I saw police abuse people on TV and people publicly apologized, and I never got anything. I got nurses lying, saying I hit them when I never did. And all this on recordings. And I am ashamed to put recordings out. And I am ashamed And here I say that I, hold on, I don't know if the recording's still on. I'm worried about the recording still on, and I don't know if I'll ever put anything up. But I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed to put recordings of my sessions. I technically and legally can. My doctor knew they were being recorded. I'm ashamed of how I sound. But back to the part of my accomplishments and my success. As you fight within the service, getting services, I don't feel that I'm better than anyone else. I'm not saying because of my success that I want better treatment or I deserve better treatment than someone else. I'm not saying that. I said even before that none of this is for myself or my daughter. It is for the other people that might or cannot speak up. I can't imagine how many people are treated so discouragingly, so demeaningly, when I, who has, I have a recording of a CCO who's telling me in all the same breath that she would never not do something behind my back and just twisting everything and with manipulation and just unbelievable and just lying to me straight out bluntly what she would not, did not, could not do and actually did. And then telling me that if I can't handle this, how the process, and this is how the process goes. I mean, just conversations that are recorded, and I'm not taking them out of context. And what is more terrible is that how, you know, again, not to get into politics, is how our president of the United States is just distorting how what it things are fake and it's not just how he is representing how things are fake, but how people can and able to distort things. So whether people are distorting it, and people are distorting things. And with technology, people can, but he has a responsibility, and not him alone. And it's not whatever his party he's in. It wouldn't matter what party. So please, it has no bearing whatsoever if his name is Donald Trump or Barack Obama or George Bush or Jimmy Carter or Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton, it wouldn't matter what the president's name was, or George Washington, or Abraham Lincoln. A president of the United States has a responsibility to, it's of course naturally to be honest, but it's not about honesty. It's about keeping American citizens on the same page of civility and calmness. And whether people are not telling the truth or misrepresenting something in the media, then we call that particular outlet out at that that particular incident and we have them retract it. That is what is responsible publication. That is what it means to get a true source. What it means to is what is about jumping around. That is what our fourth branch of government is. It's people for the press. It's freedom of the press. But that is not this chaotic and hectic free-for-all, it's not even nonsensical. It's it's responsible. It is causing hectic and chaos in our democracy. What will happen to our country in years to come? This is so dangerous in the world of technology as well. We have to take like a lasso and pull this in tight. This wild horse, and I don't mean our president, I mean the situation. I am one to respect every single person, whether they respect me, respect others, or respect themselves. Whether they respect an institution, whether they respect a principle, whether they respect an idea, I will respect everyone, because something is always more important. Logic, rational. Is of importance, is key to staying focused, to staying balanced. Listening, compromising. And believing something that you've seen with your own eyes and hearing with your own ears. And I'm not saying that because, again, of our president. It is something that I've believed throughout my life. And I have said many times, and not because, again, of our president. And I've heard people have said recently. I've always mentioned the game of telephone. You only have to play it with 5 people. And by the end it comes to you, it's something different. And it's a child's game, but play it with adults. And it will know that the result will be no different. Meaning, what I just said, what comes from the beginning person to the end will be something, it won't be the same from what the person said. So it doesn't matter if it's played with children or with adults. So I would never, make a decision, I would never believe something on something I did not see or hear with my own eyes. I won't say never. I did once, and I regretted it. It was at my aunt's funeral, my great aunt's funeral, who I made the eulogy for. And I was ashamed, and I was, and I regretted it. And I said in the other recordings that my mother and my aunt never got along through the whole childhood, and through the whole life, excuse me. But of course I had somewhat of a relationship with my aunt. It wasn't really how I would have liked it. She happened to be the owner of the TC program I was in. So actually it was a traumatic relationship. I thought at 15 after I tried to kill myself and ended up in a coma in a psychiatric hospital, since I was part of the, I had custody of the state had custody of me since I was taken out of my house because of the abuse in my home. I thought I ended up going to a week to my aunt and uncle's house, and they were financially very well off. They were millionaires. And like I said, that my great aunt was, they were, you know, they in those days, I mean, they were, we were talking about you know, they were born I think 1890 something or whatever, and I think my grandmother was born 1904 or something, and like I said, my grandmother and grandfather were deaf mutes, and my great aunt and great uncle took care of my mother and my aunt, and they were well off. They were very well off. I had a great time at my aunt's uncle's house. So I knew I was going into treatment, though. And in the institution, this one institution that I was leaving, I do have to I don't want to say tip my hat to, because that's more like showing it, like respect. Not that I didn't respect these people, that I want to definitely give a shout out, and it's not just more a shout out. I mean, there are people that have touched my life that I won't forget, and there were a couple, less than a handful, in this place, because that was definitely a place more of horror, and not that even these people, I would have to say, even knew the crap that was happening up in isolation. They had to know, not they had to know, but I guess if they thought now of how hard it was to get me in isolation, maybe they'll think of why isolation. I don't know if everybody fought about isolation like I fought. I'm not so sure if people walked up to isolation, or it took 5 guys to bring them up to isolation, fighting, kicking, screaming. like it took me. Or how, I don't know. But anyway. But there were a couple of people that were special there. Anyway, so I thought I was going to the TC and it was going to be more, I mean, I knew it was, I didn't know what I knew. I knew my brother went there and was there. And I knew it was a drug program, but I thought it was more family orientated and I thought it was going to be a nice place to be. Well, boy, did I think wrong. And let me tell you, it was nothing but far from easy, and it was pure hell, and not the same kind of abuse that was happening in the institutions, but if anyone thinks because it was family it was easier, quite the contrary, quite opposite. I remember Louis walking me in, we were in the kitchen and we were walking towards the refrigerator, the ice box. And he said to me that, sorry, it's the reason why it's so much harder on you is because we're going to make sure you never come back here again. I remember him saying that to me. I don't remember what I said, but I don't even remember exactly what I thought. I guess I was just thinking, the fuck, excuse my French, you think I'd ever would come back here? Probably was thinking, will you ever fucking think I'll come back here? You fucking crazy? Excuse my French. People have to understand that I don't like cursing and I try very hard not to. Because in that place, it's all you did was curse. It's all you did was curse. I know in the trailer park, at the end, the guy at the end says, I yell, I hate to yell. It's all I do. Well, I try not to yell, but I learned to yell here. He's exactly right. It's all we did. We had to scream. We had to scream. We cursed. That's all we did. Was curse. My daughter said to me that I know she learned to curse there. I remember coming into the group home one day and I hear this guy, this big guy, and I walk in and he's cursing and I'm looking at him like, I mean, he's a staff member and I'm looking at him. Now, this place is not designed, these group homes are not designed to curse. The TC was designed to curse. It was part of the TC to curse. It was part of the therapy to curse. But these group homes were not designed for staff members to be cursing to one another. I walked in and I looked at him like, excuse me? Anyway. One day, maybe I'll get brave enough to just do these live. You know? Who knows? The fine line between bravery and stupidity. I always lose track of what I was talking about, and I never got on. I never even talked about my daughter. I think that's called avoidance. Maybe I do need to do these live. Don't know. What I do know, like I said in the last recording, is I've lived on quotes, and one of my biggest quotes I lived on is, "The only thing you can fear is fear itself." Maybe I should just end this with that one. And maybe I should start a live chat. The problem with a live chat is I gotta get dressed. You know? Or I could do a live one, just a recording and not visual. And then I could do a contest. If I get enough likes, I'll come live. Right? I mean, you guys could see what I look like anyway through my pictures. Oh God, I have an appointment today. I forgot I have a visual appointment. Time is it? 2 o'clock. Oh man. Means I gotta shower and get dressed anyway. Oh. Alright. Alright, let's try to recap a little bit of what I scooped over and what I missed. I have no idea. All right, so I know the beginning I was talking about the was talking about my daughter, but first I went off. I was talking about my properties, so I could understand that you can't own anything to get to. I mean, it's the same thing when you get older and you go in a nursing home, you have to not own anything or you lose everything. So obviously I'm, you know, which is really a terrible, terrible thing. I don't know why they have to put a time limit on that. Obviously, if you get sick and you own something, why should a time limit matter? You're going to anyway take the money from the state. Yes or no? So if you owned something and you get sick and you've worked all your life to own something, why should why should you not be able to give that property to your children? I mean, seriously. And that's the problem with the healthcare services. I mean, everyone lives to want to better and then will everything to their children. So why do you have to die? I guess you have to die, and then the state doesn't take care of you. So, But, I mean, but you have Medicare. So even your 20% left of your Medicare, and if you have secondary insurance, you still have to, that's worth your whole house? Seriously? So in my situation, I wanted to get OPWDD, okay, to get help. And to do that, you need Medicaid because you need a Medicaid service coordinator. So I couldn't own property. So I had to get rid of everything. So in that respect, I get Medicaid. I still have to pay into the Medicaid anyway because my Social Security check is more than what the money is. And I still haven't got any help because the process is still unbelievable. My alarm went off because I need to start getting ready. Okay, anyway, I gotta start getting ready. But real quick, I need to go into back to whatever was with my daughter. I don't want to leave that hanging. I don't even know what I was saying. I don't know. That's a whole podcast in itself. All I know is that she has experienced a lot of trauma. And it was unnecessary trauma. And I didn't realize the drawbacks and the repercussions that were going to come after. And I didn't even realize it's 2 years later that she's out of the group home. And I didn't know the effects it still has on her. And I didn't know. And I just kept saying, and I just kept saying to her that at least, it's not like my childhood, your mother didn't abandon you. Like mine did. And I've been with you every step of the way. And when I overdosed, my mother never came. And when I say overdose, I mean, took the pills, the medicated pills that they gave me, and to whatever, silence, keep me quiet, sedate me and have me walk around like a zombie. That's what I mean, that those medications. And I saved them up and just took them. So, but I can't understand how a mother cannot come and see their child in a coma. But so I just kept telling my daughter that, I mean, I was with my daughter
every step and fighting to get her out. And again, I put her there. This was all voluntary, and it was just unbelievable how they just held on to her, and it was just amazing. It's just incredible. I mean, it was just incredible. Incredible is not the right word. There is no word. It's just, there's no word. And it's wrong. And I feel so abused by it. But she is the one that's hurting and trapped and feels traumatized by it. And I never slowed down enough to get out of what I feel and to get out of whatever, of everything, and to get out of, I guess, not necessarily 100% justifying that I was fighting for her, because I'm not consciously ignoring her feelings by justifying what I did, because it was never a conscious thing. But I didn't put two and two together. I really didn't. But I hear her now, and I hear her now, and I hear her now, and I want to help her, obviously. But it's even more terrible now that I connected that dot. And even, I just said it even in this one recording that, you know, it's not about me or Juliana, and it's not about me and Juliana, and it's still not, but it is to a point, because she's still hurting right now because of it. But I want to help others. I want to help that this doesn't happen. That this just doesn't happen. They can't hold on and do this to people. They don't have a right. I was watching the other day, and I rewound this on TV to then record it, where I don't remember who this person is. He's a former something of some office. I don't remember exactly, but actually I think it was during a Republican presidency, if I recall. So that's significant if you want to get behind the politics part, that it's not, you know, so say a Democrat, you know, but though I think it's a state office that doesn't necessarily have to be Democrat or Republican, but it was a Republican administration, put it that way. But if I'm correct, I could be wrong of exactly, because I could be mixing everything up in my head right now. But the point is, he was saying about how, you know, how we're recognizing all the discrepancies between black and brown communities and individuals during this coronavirus pandemic. But also, there's issues with disability. And he made a comment about how people with disabilities are treated. And I can't quote him, but to the point of where they're demoralized, I think maybe he had said, if not that word, something in that relation. Where they're just not respected to the way they ought to be. So with that said, I'm going to end this recording and pick up another time. And who knows, maybe I will start going live and see how that, I don't know. I've been saying that for a while now, like more than a year. Maybe I'm not brave yet. Not brave enough. So I'll end this. Until next time, may everyone be safe during this time and always.